Good afternoon, everyone. Nate Dickinson with you on KATE 1450. It's a Monday, which means we're joined by Mike Grimm, the voice of the Minnesota Gophers, talking to us about everything going on in sports and, well, really everything going on in the world right now for a little bit at least. And we'll start there, Mike. When we got on, we always just get on the phone, ask each other how we're doing, and I brought up just, I'm doing all right, just kind of weird times in what's going on around the world, but really in our backyards as well here in Minnesota. How was your weekend? How did you take in everything that kind of went down in Minneapolis and around the world as well?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, for sure. It's been an interesting time, a sad time, a tragic time, a time that makes your heart hurt, your stomach turn, all those things. My weekend was a little unique in that I actually was out of the state. I with some of the stuff opening up and the stay-at-home stuff, you know, getting lifted, I had not seen my mom for a while. So Friday, I hopped in the car, and this was had been planned for a couple of weeks. And so I spent the weekend in the state of Iowa, where I grew up, with my mom, and I got to see some other family members. So it was I was watching kind of what was happening in a lot of the big cities, including Minneapolis and St. Paul, from afar, and trying to make sense of a lot of it. Obviously, I was in town last week through Friday afternoon, and you know, was closely following and monitoring, you know, what is the most important issue probably of our time now in regard to socially what's happening and how we can all make it better. I do think last week maybe it has changed some of the tide. Maybe it has opened the eyes of some more people into what, you know, there is real hurt out there. There is real heartbreak out there. There is real problems out there. And hopefully we can push forward, you know, get through some of the, look, I think protesting, you have to have a voice. You have to be allowed to do that. Obviously, by the end of the week and into the weekend, it became, you know, the nonsense with some outside forces coming in and some forces protesting that was not at all part of the original purpose of the protest. So if we get through that nonsense, let's hope, and get back to the issue at hand, and hopefully we can, you know, all heal and all improve and all get better and all take a look in the mirror and I'll figure out how we can move forward and make everything, you know, a better place. And that's everybody. Everybody has to do that. But from a sports world, that will be in the spotlight, quite frankly, over the next, for sure, over the short term and obviously over the long term. Sports, that's a lot of thought and ideas in terms of what's happening socially in the country, particularly on race relations. So it will be in the forefront, and it will be, you know, hopefully positive things can happen that come from an awful, gut-wrenching situation.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of learning for everyone to do on all sides. I mean, just kind of trying to understand what minorities go through during all of this. I was listening to an interview with Arianne Foster earlier today, and he talked about, you know, white people don't have to have a conversation with their families about how to interact with police, and that's just kind of commonplace where he grew up. I listened to, I don't know if you've ever listened to ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes, but she had Ryan Saunders on this morning, and he talked about how some of his players, when they go out for runs, they consciously make sure that they have their phones on armbands instead of around their waist so that nobody could think that they were ever reaching for their waist to get something if they were to come across somebody else and they were just going for their phone. It's like those kind of things I feel like are the things that we need to not just understand but learn about what people are going through. And I don't think either of us are ever going to truly understand what's going on. But I do think that what people have been doing, just to wrap it around back to sports, especially in Minnesota, have been really, really encouraging over the past week or so. What Ryan Saunders has come out and said just on the podcast I listened to this morning and even before that, how quickly the people up at the University of Minnesota were to react to what had happened and all of that, the Timberwolves as well, Carl Anthony Towns and Josh Okogie going out there and speaking with Steven Jackson, who was out in Minneapolis and a good friend of George Floyd's. I think the way that people in sports especially have responded so quickly and the things that they've said have been really, really good in that not only are they showing their rage kind of at how devastating this kind of thing is, but also how willing a lot of them have been to speak up and try to not just be upset, but also teach people things. It is really, really encouraging to see, and hopefully will lead to at least some sort of change soon.
No doubt. And I think that, as you mentioned, to start that question and start that piece of the of this angle, is that, you know, we as white folk don't understand the day-to-day activity that has to and mental anguish that goes on. And like you said, planning out a jogging route even, and planning out how you go about life. And I think one of the ways, we can't imagine it, but we can try to artificially put ourselves in the shoes of what happens. And I think one of the best examples or metaphors that I heard someone say this weekend in watching some of the coverage, and it certainly can be used in a metaphor here in Minnesota. I live in Lakeville, Minnesota, which is a suburb of the cities. Most of your listeners here are living in Albert Lea, which is, in relative terms, a larger town in outstate, so to speak, Minnesota. And let's face it, mostly white. And the person I heard talk about this, because I have had people, and you watch that video, and it's stomach turning. First of all, tragic, obviously, and certainly, thoughts and prayers go out. But you think of the horror of those people that had to stand and watch that, and think about this: they're watching this police officer with the knee to the back of this of Mr. Floyd's head, and basically the life gets snuffed out of him. And they had to stand and watch it. And my thought is this, in hearing people talk about this, if that happened in Lakeville, where I live, or Albert Lea, where most of your listeners live, and let's say it happened to be, let's say it's a white guy that has, and there's a police officer with a knee to the back, and this is the same thing is happening, and there's 10 white people standing by watching this unfold. Instead of screaming and filming it, I think there's a good chance somebody would have taken off and pushed the officer off of the person who's handcuffed and face down and clearly in medical trauma. I think there's a good chance that in most places, somebody would have just run and pushed that officer off Mr. Floyd. And I'm saying this in our example for this discussion. Let's say instead it's a group of white people watching a white person have that happen. And the reason that would happen is because there's no fear that you're going to get shot. You'd be able to probably put your hands on the officer. Now, you might get arrested, you might get charged with something, but you'd probably save the person's life or create attention to get an ambulance there quicker or what have you. Those people couldn't do it. You know why? Because if you charge that officer in that situation and pushed him off, there's a really good chance you're going to get shot and maybe killed. And that's a stunning thing to think about, right? Think about that for a second. You have to watch because you can't comprehend the idea that you could go try to help. Where I think in Lakeville or Albert Lea or my hometown in Iowa or other places, that's not a consideration. You're probably going to challenge the cop physically and say, look, get off it. He's handcuffed. He's got medical trauma. We got to get help to this guy. But they couldn't because that's their reality. They know if they go tackle a guy, there's a really good chance they're going to get shot. And think of going through life that way. And when I heard that explained to me that way, it kind of put a pretty harsh reality into what's going on.
Yeah, and it's, you're right. And I think just, it's not enough to, like you said, not do anything at this point. If you A lot of people, I'm sure, don't know how to help, in which I'd say ask. And if you can help in any way, do so. I donated over the weekend to the Minnesota Freedom Fund, and I'm trying to listen to and become as knowledgeable as I can, because I kind of realized that over the course of the last week, I have been someone who's just been agreeing without making it known that I'm agreeing with everyone who has been saying that this is unjust and everything. And I think that's one of the biggest things that needs to be done, is having everyone who is not doing anything but just silently supporting becoming someone who is actively supporting. And I think that maybe that's one of the fastest ways to try and get some sort of change going here quickly. But again, it's a long process. As Arian Foster said when I was listening to him, it's racism isn't going to go away by the time we all die. It's just the small victories we have to get.
100%. And for long before this happened, my own personal belief has been there's been some problem with open communication in regard to race relations, because a lot of everyone is scared to have open conversations. For example, I think in general, the white population is a little scared to have a conversation because you say one wrong thing and your career can be over, whether it's in radio, whether it's as an accountant, whether it's whatever. And that's scary. So it's easier not to say anything. So on the flip side of that, sometimes there may not be any intended harm, and words may do harm that you're not aware of. And so even on the flip side, there has to be a willingness to understand there could be offensive language unintended that you might have to deal with to make us get to a better spot. So I think it's a worldwide, you know, it's a global situation in terms of the conversation. We have to be willing to be offended here in the short term to try to get long-term gain on both sides. And everyone today seems to be so willing to be so quickly offended, and it shuts off conversation. In this case, I think the healthy situation would be, well, oh, okay, let's have this conversation. Oh, I did not realize that would be offensive. I meant no offense by it. It's now good to know that, and now we can move on and try to make it better. And I think there's been some issues with that. I think generally most everyone wants to try to create a better situation. Unfortunately, those conversations sometimes don't happen out of fear, and sometimes you got to get out of your comfort zone. But to do that, you also have to be comfortable with the idea that you know, what you say might hurt someone, and you might not know it, and you have to understand that that can't be something that that's going to penalize people in the short term. Eventually, we have to get to a point where we understand something might be a problem. But in the short term, I think we have to be willing to have open conversations, quite frankly, in race relations that right now a lot of people aren't willing to do.
I agree. I think there's definitely a sense of people not wanting to stick their heads out and put their hands up as someone who needs to learn something because they're afraid of being labeled as racist or whatever it may be, when actually you're actively trying to become the opposite. And I think that's a really good point. This is kind of an odd thing to try and transition from, but we'll try and shift over to sports again, Mike. And I want to talk a little bit more about the Minnesota Gophers football team, as now Minnesota has racked up its 18th commitment of the 2021 class, which is big for being this early. And I'm trying to think back to, I always compare things to when I was at Syracuse covering their football team. And in that year when Syracuse won 10 games, beat Clemson, ends up winning a bowl game again for the first time in a little while, the Orange had a noticeably better time recruiting, but it didn't happen at that much faster of a speed, and the Gophers are doing things so quickly right now. And we've talked about some of the advantages that Minnesota has with PJ Fleck and his energy and kind of how they got out in front of all this online stuff when things went exclusively online. But how much faster have these commitments been coming in compared to the other years that you've been covering this team and its recruiting processes?
Yeah, a lot, and I think that's true across the board. The Gophers are, as you mentioned, a little ahead of the curve, but everyone is getting committed quicker. And I do think that the time that we're in right now have created, I think we're probably headed to two separate recruiting seasons, for lack of a better term. I think these young people They're not allowed to take on-campus visits in terms of official visits. They're all headed into their senior years with a lot of unknowns. Some of them may not even have high school football seasons. We don't know that yet in certain areas due to the coronavirus and such. So I think they're trying to stay, to get committed, to get their spot, to make sure they're not left behind. And I also think that, as you mentioned, P.J. Fleck, by the way, you mentioned Arian Foster and some others. P.J. Fleck was on, I have not seen it yet. I was in a text exchange with some Gopher people earlier today. P.J. Fleck was on First Take today on ESPN. It might be worth people, and they addressed the social situation right now, obviously, with the heart of this thing in Minnesota. P.J. Fleck, there were a lot of Gopher players, by the way, who this past week have been out, a lot of Gopher athletes from all sports, including football, that have been out as part of these peaceful protests. And as part, in fact, I saw yesterday Carter Coughlin was on that bridge, former Gopher was on that bridge when that semi-tanker came flying around the corner, along with some other Gopher athletes. So anyway, Fleck was on today. It might be worth trying to track down for Gopher fans and watch that video. But anyway, he is ahead of the recruiting situation. And so the NCAA has said no official visits. You can go to a campus and visit, but you can't have contact with coaches, and nothing can be official about it. And that's going to be true now through the end of August. So I think we're going to see, once official visits start, almost a second recruiting season, including from kids who are now committed to places, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's any other place, where they're going to say, look, I do want to make sure, so let me do some visits. So I think this is what I would call the major season, but I do think there's going to be, quote-unquote, I guess for lack of a better term, I'll dub it the playoffs. Once the real football season starts and once official visits restart, I think recruiting will restart a little bit, and there are going to be coaches that are a little nervous. There are going to be coaches that will, again, if they're out ahead of the curve and their message has been consistent, will be able to keep kids or maybe gain new kids. But it's unlike anything we've seen. So I think that's all part of what's in store for us over the next however many months until the first signing date in December. And Fleck has certainly been one of the trailblazers in terms of recruiting when there's no official visits available, and we'll see how that trends through the season. And there's no doubt they've been able to capitalize now on that 11-win season. Last year's recruiting class was basically it signed in December. At that point, the Gophers were 10-2. They win the bowl game. You get into January. That class was all basically committed and signed before any of that really happened. So you're seeing the residual of that big season, quite frankly, with what's happening currently.
Yeah, and again, you mentioned the Arian Foster interview. I just wanted to properly attribute. That was on Pardon My Take this morning, if anyone wanted to go and actually listen to that. But you kind of answered the question I wanted to get into next when you talked about just kind of the two waves of recruiting. It will lead to likely more decommits once we get to that second part of things, or, as you mentioned, at the very least, people looking at their options, even if they don't flat-out decommit from the school they're committed to now. How comfortable do you think Gophers fans should be able to be with some of those higher-end players that the Gophers have now? Because you have to really weigh the idea that these guys committed because the Gophers had a better season to the fact that, well, the things that you kind of mentioned before, they don't want to be left behind when things do start picking up. Maybe this was just the safe option right now. How much of it is that kind of stuff, where maybe guys are just making sure that they've got themselves covered, compared to the other end of the argument, which may be, well, they could have committed to any of these schools while they're not being able to visit, and they pick the Gophers. That's a good sign.
More of the latter, we shall see. There's no doubt about that. But I think more of the latter. Like you said, a lot of these guys, and this is new to the Gophers for a while, where the Gophers currently, this group that's currently committed, the amount of other Power 5 offers that these kids have is incredible. Minnesota for a long time made a living off of recruits that had maybe one other high major offer, maybe two, a lot of Mid-America Conference offers, that kind of stuff, and had success with it. What has changed now is the Gopher current class is, I mean, they're beating out legitimate Power 5 kids that have multiple Power 5 offers. You know, they're beating out kids from, or they're getting kids committed that if they wanted a safe option could have gone to Baylor, could have gone to Miami of Florida, could have gone to Oklahoma State, you know, could have gone to Wisconsin, could have gone to Iowa. Now, look, you know, a few up kids as well have gone to some of those other places. But the amount of kids that they're in on right now that other major really successful programs are in on, that's a new thing. And the fact is, as you mentioned, they had options and they chose Minnesota. So I think they feel good about that. And I think the official visit part would be scary if, you know, if you were trying to hide something. And the only thing occasionally, you know, wink, wink, that the Gopher coaches are trying to hide is cold weather. Otherwise, the campus is great. The academic side of it's great. You're going to get a good degree. You're in a major conference. You're playing, you know, in a nice stadium. You're going to be on national TV. You're in a big city with a lot of options and opportunities to do things. So there's a lot to sell. There's no doubt about that. So the only thing, you know, could be, hey, you're going to get an official visit in November and it's 9 degrees. That could be a little scary when the kids' other options are Miami of Florida and, Texas A&M, let's say, where it's a little warmer at that time of year. But I think I have some pretty good confidence in terms of how official visits have gone in the past. P.J. Fleck has really made hay on official visits. If you remember a year ago, this month in June, he had a pretty good recruiting class last year. A good bulk of that recruiting class committed on one big weekend in June when a bunch of these recruits visited. So I have pretty good confidence that they'll be able to hold on to most of these. And the idea that the official visit would be an issue is probably not a non-factor. It would probably be some other reason, whether somebody else offered, whether, you know, and in some cases, sometimes the Gophers would, you know, there have been a few occasions where it's been a mutual parting, where maybe Minnesota decides after, you know, a few months that the marriage is not what they thought, and both sides decide to move on from that standpoint as well. So a lot of time between now and signing day in December, and so many unknowns. I mean, let's think about just how much the world has changed since you and I last talked here on KAT Radio a week ago today, right? I mean, it's amazing what 7 days can literally change the world.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mike Grimm joining us here on KAT Radio. And Mike, we've talked a lot about what's been going on without people being able to get onto campus or things like that, but there's now getting into discussions around the country of some schools letting athletes back on campus come the middle of this month, starting up practicing again. What's the latest from the University of Minnesota as to their stance on when they think they can get players back on campus and practicing, in football especially, because that seems to be kind of the first step that all these universities are taking?
Yeah, right now the Big Ten says today, June 1st, players can come back. That had been a league-wide deal. And so now it's up to the specific schools as to when they'll allow students back. It's my understanding that the Golden Gopher Athletic Department will start allowing students back. I think by mid-month the summer classes will start, and the hope is they can take advantage of some of the facilities and the summer school opportunities. And I think by the end of this month, now that we're in June, a lot of decisions will be made based on what we see happening on campus with the students who do come back, who do take part. You know, it's another data point, not to dehumanize it, but it's another data point of a bunch of people now in a bit of more close quarters. And I think by the end of the month, the Big Ten will and other college conferences will put a plan in place for the fall. And certainly a lot of that mechanism has started. I mean, there's multiple scenarios. Certainly the decision makers are mulling, but this month and how things go, I think will have a flow chart effect. Okay, this happened. That's good. Okay, this is good. And here's then the path we'll take, assuming everything else is all things else being equal. And look, there's more research every week coming out about the, you know, the coronavirus and the COVID-19 and who it impacts and who's at risk and how many people might have it that didn't know it. And all of those things are going to factor in. So with every week that goes by, more data points come in. So I think it'll all have an impact. And it's amazing, as we mentioned just a week ago at this time, that was the number one issue. And now, while it still is and still certainly will be a factor, let's face it, not only is safety now going to be an issue for these schools, but security will be an issue. There are going to be, look, this is not a problem that's going to solve itself overnight from a social injustice standpoint. So there are going to be safety and health issues from a coronavirus standpoint that the school's got to deal with. And there are going to be security and safety issues from social unrest angles, security. You know, how do you allow protests while at the same time making sure things stay civil and calm? And college campuses, you know, no one needs to be reminded that college campuses are a place where a lot of social activity happens and a lot of social causes are addressed. And so I think that has a new X factor, so to speak, has been introduced here in the last week. I think it's fine. It's good. I think the more discussion and debate and all of that we have is good, but it all has to be done in a safe and secure manner.
Mike Grimm again joining us here on KATE Radio. I want to get away from the Gophers a little bit, Mike, to talk a little bit more about the MLB and the Players Union right now. And with these two sides still seemingly really far apart, the owners sent the players this proposal where they'd be 82 games and they'd be on a sliding scale of salary that would really cut down a lot of what players were being paid compared to what they had to agreed to before. The players pretty much ignored that and then over the weekend send back this proposal with 114 games with the same pay scale of prorated salaries that they had agreed to back in March. I've been under the stance that it's not that these two sides can't find a deal. What will end up likely killing the baseball season, if it's killed on my, in my head at least, is just that they won't be able to come together quick enough to be able to do anything significant before the end of the summer comes. Where are you at in everything that you've seen with what baseball has been doing? And I guess in the same vein of what I've been thinking, how quickly do you think this has to get done to be able to have a baseball season?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting to me. It, you know, you go from 80 games to 114 games. That's a massive difference. And so, obviously, they've increased it to 114 games. This comes from a player's side that traditionally would be, you know, advocating for fewer games. But I think it's become clear that money, obviously, money is an issue. And I think it's all relative, right? It's clear that the players want a big chunk of the, a bigger chunk than what's there. And if that means they have to play more games, they're willing to do that. I think what it also shows is no matter how much money you make, it's all relative. Whether you're making $50,000 a year and you've had trouble through this coronavirus to continue your income, or you've been furloughed or what have you, and you're concerned about paying off your apartment rent this week or your house payment or what have you, it's all relative. If you make $20 million a year instead of having a, you know, $80,000 house, like maybe somebody that doesn't have the means and worrying about how to pay it, if you make $20 million a year, you have a $20 million house, and now you're trying to figure out how to make that payment. Look, I'm not sympathetic necessarily to players who make a lot of money or owners who make even more money, but I do think it shows that, look, they're susceptible to the same things. They have house payments. They have, you know, they have, now they're bigger house payments, and it's all relative, and it's hard to feel sorry for them. We're not going to, you know, hold a bake sale at the local church for any of these major league players. But I do think that it's clear that that they, like, you know, it's all relative. They also need to pay the bills, so to speak. They're much bigger bills, and I think we're seeing that. So, I mean, if you go from 80 games as a player to proposing you want 114 so you can make more money, then I think that's part of what's become clear in this. And yes, the calendar's ticking, especially if you're going to go with a 114 game schedule, because weather is a factor in this. Although I know even way back, Scott Boras, amongst others, was proposing the idea that you would play all the way up through Christmas in southern locations or maybe indoor locations. And so, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to need to play. They're going to need to be on TV to get the revenue and to pay the players, and they're going to have to figure it out. And the old, it's cliche, but there is some truth to it. billionaires and millionaires trying to figure out how to, you know, split up and divvy up a chunk of money that most everyone else in the world has no idea what it means to have that kind of money. And that's going to turn people off if they can't figure out how to do that. And for the sake of the future of the game, and for the sake of the calendar in the short term, they better figure it out.
Yeah, and then you get into also, if you're playing later in the year, all of a sudden you're competing with other sports when usually baseball is being played in the summer, and really there's nothing else to be watching on TV. And now, especially in this year, there's going to be all sorts of things packed into that late end of the year time frame. I do want to ask, and it's been the reason why I've been kind of on the player side throughout it is because they did have a deal put together already in March, and maybe the owners didn't understand exactly how bad things were going to get, but that's kind of what's led me to be on the player side of things. But the big argument with the money, and that's obviously the problem right now, is that the players want those prorated salaries that they agreed to before. The owners want them to take big, big cuts off of that. Do you think that baseball will be played this season? And if so, which side do you think breaks first? Or do you think it's more likely that there isn't a baseball season now, as some people are starting to kind of, if not come to terms with, at least predict?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I also think this. I think the players, you know, I know earlier I talked about they have bills to pay, and I was being somewhat serious about that, but also somewhat tongue-in-cheek about it because, you know, those are some real first-world problems when you're, you know, talking about, you know, especially some of the higher-end players. But I do think this. They also, many of them are at a situation where, let's face it, if they don't play, they're, you know, they're not going to file bankruptcy. You know, they might be stretched thin in relative terms. But so I think they have some leverage in this. And I also think that they're not all that. In other words, it's like, okay, I can still spend time with my family. There is a pandemic going on. I'm a little worried about that. Do I want to be away from them during this pandemic for 5 months to play baseball? And so it's going to take something to talk me into not giving or into giving up that family time during a pandemic, giving up being around my family. And so prorated salaries might not even be enough. And yet the owners on the other side are saying, hey, you know, we want to cut it even more. And there's so many tentacles to it. But I do think, and I think you and I talked about it 2 weeks ago when we had this conversation, my thought all along has been if there is no season, it will be in part because they can't figure out how to divvy it up, all this pile of money, albeit a shrunken pile of money. I think it also will come down to are the players willing to leave their families behind? Are enough of them willing to leave their families behind? And look, you can argue, and I have even posed this argument in discussion, you know, just conversing about this, is like, look, a lot of players spend the season away from their family anyway. I mean, there's guys that play for the Twins whose families live in Florida all year, and they come up and they'll get a condo or an apartment here and be gone. So for many, it's not any different than it would have been, other than there's a health issue, a pandemic. And now you factor in the social unrest that is going across the country in many major cities where some of these players might live. Do you want to leave your family behind with that also hanging over the head? And the NHL, I mean, not to get totally off subject, the NHL is an even a bigger bit of a predicament from that standpoint, because I'm going to guess what, Nate, you think a third of those players probably are international players? Baseball doesn't deal with that as much, you know, in terms of total international. Obviously, they have a big influx of Latino players from the Dominican and from Mexico and the like, but it's you know, that's a little closer, and conditions there would indicate that it's probably better being here. Where if you're from Sweden, you're from Norway, you're from Russia, you're from the Czech Republic, and you play in the NHL, you may feel like in this current situation, you don't want to come to the U.S. You might think it's safer for you and your family to stay in Stockholm, you know? So I think there, you know, aside from the money and aside from the schedule and aside from the calendar, there are some personal issues, family-related issues that are in the last week will have probably a bigger X factor in that as well. So there's a lot at stake. The calendar's at stake for baseball especially. And to answer the question, ultimately I do think all those leagues will play games. How it comes about and how much pain and heartbreak has to be felt, and again, it's in relative terms when I say pain and heartbreak, how that all has to unfold remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's a good point about the hockey, too, there, Mike, to wrap things up. Mike Grimm joining us here on KATE Radio. He talks with us every single Monday about things going on with the Gophers and things going on in sports and, well, just the world in general, as you heard today. Mike, thanks again for talking to us for a little bit. It was a real good conversation to have at the start there about everything that's going on, and then nice to get an update on Minnesota and the Gophers as well. We'll talk to you again next week, Mike. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it. Thank you, Nate.